the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast featuring the Crop Doctors.
Good morning from the Crop Doctors Podcast studio in Stoneville. Eric's on the phone with Tom and I from Startville. So, Eric, this is his go time. A lot of corn is up and going. A lot of corn is coming up. We've got a range of stuff going on with the corn crop. So Eric was nice enough to take a little bit of time out of his Wednesday morning. So it'll be, we're recording this a few days in advance of dropping it. Certainly going to be a lot of work get done between now and next Tuesday when this comes out. And then, of course, it's supposed to rain again on Monday, or at least there's a chance of rain again on Monday.
What I've been telling people is if it rains anymore on this experiment station, there may not be any seed left over there in that seed room. I've never seen a mouse problem like we have right now.
They're vicious.
I stopped one yesterday that had escaped one of the glue traps we put out just as like parity level. And that dang thing had chewed one of its legs off to get out and then had sucked a whole bunch of stuff up off the floor onto the residual glue from the glue trap.
There's always mice over there, but you're right. The population is, they're thick this year.
If you stand there long enough, you're going to see six run by. I mean, it's unreal. It's a mouse fiasco. I've never seen anything like this.
My folks were talking about they busted out a nest of them.
Oh, I did too.
Last week.
Yep, I found a nest of babies. I scooped them up with a trowel from the door of my pickup truck and chunked them into the gravel. I'm sure that'll be considered a heartless situation, but I'm sorry. The seeds are a lot more important than a mouse population.
Eric, are you getting settled in your new area in Stoneville since they kicked you out of your building?
Starkville.
I'm sorry. Starkville. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, we're doing fine.
Did you get everything arranged? Can you find everything?
Yeah, we found some interesting things, I guess, during the move, that's for sure. But anyway, we're beyond that and trying to get through a planting season right now for sure. So it's been a tough situation across most of the state for a planting season, and still got some corn yet to be planted, particularly in the northeastern part of the state. So hopefully we get some good weather and get the crop finished out in good shape.
We're going to get into that. Before we do, I came up with my question walking over here. I feel like we have often asked you a baseball question this time of year because I know you're a baseball aficionado. I wouldn't say I'm a baseball junkie, but I watch a lot of college baseball. And I guess if I watched Major League Baseball too, that would qualify me as a junkie. But so I'm a college baseball junkie for sure. My question is, baseball is a heavily statted, and I just made that word up, game. In your opinion, what do you think is the most useless baseball stat?
Oh.
I stumped him, Tom.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. That's the first thought that came into my mind.
I'm not sure what I would say is the most useless one. I follow more and more of that stuff, but there's a lot of them that I don't know exactly what the stat means, I guess. But
on the redirect, what is a stat that you have no idea what it means? Because I have several of those, too.
Just a second. I've got a page pulled up with some Mississippi State stats, I think, on.
A lot of the pitching stats, I feel like, what do you do with that? And so as I was walking over here, I was thinking about, for example, Nolan Ryan. I feel like he just went out there and I mean, he certainly was a professional pitcher, but that dude would throw hundreds of pitches relatively close together. And now, of course, that's all tightly monitored, and then the metrics that come along with it to complement the monitoring of the pitch count and innings.
I doubt they even recorded number of pitches that man threw in a game. He started well beyond the thought process for that and trying to maintain somebody's arm and elbow and reduce the likelihood of Tommy John surgery. And yes, I do know enough about baseball to be dangerous. But
so what'd you come up with, Eric?
Well, I'm looking at this stat page, and the one that I'm not sure what it is FIG percentage. I'm not sure what that is. What I would say, I guess, as far as overlooked importance, I guess, would be situational hitting, I guess.
Like runners in scoring position.
Game on the line, yeah. Late in the game. And, you know, sometimes things work out and sometimes they don't, I guess. But, you know, it doesn't matter if you're hitting 310 and you strike out with a runner on third base with one out, I guess, that sort of thing is disappointing and frustrating in some situations more than anything else.
We mentioned when we started, the corn crop's a little bit spread out right now because we did have some early planted corn, and then with the rain related stuff, cold temperatures, things like that, mm-hmm. planting is kind of dragged on maybe a little bit longer than what we wanted to. So I guess start off, just tell us kind of where we're at in the state for corn, and then we'll get into some specifics of what you've been hearing and seeing about the problems that we're encountering.
Planting season has been drawn out, and you know, we've had a couple of windows of opportunity, I guess, at different points in April, which has allowed the Delta to plant most of their crop, except maybe in the northern part of the Delta, which got off to a slower start. And then the northeastern part of the state really is just getting started, or got started maybe last week. And we had corn planted in late February, early March in parts of South Mississippi, and it's off to a running start, you might say. But we've had a frustrating and difficult planting season with just opportunities to get on the field for the most part. And hopefully we'll have a nice week for the remainder of this week. And I know we've got a couple relatively small chances of rain, but we sure need to miss these 30% chances that we have for the next several days and be able to get this crop finished out and obviously get on to the rest of the crops that need to be planted as well.
When you say that, Eric, what's too late? Because I think that's a question lots of people tend to ask right about now. I mean, heck, I texted you last week about some of that corn that I had seen that was just planted around Morgan City, and I wasn't saying it was too late. I was a little surprised that there was still some going in the ground in that general area. But what would be too late, you know, regardless of like an insurance cutoff or any of those types of planting date situations?
Well, the insurance date for corn is April 25th for most of the state. There's the northeastern part of the state that backs up to May the 10th. And those dates are relatively irrelevant. Our research, particularly with irrigated corn, shows that you can plant up until May the 1st at a Highway 82 latitude without any significant yield reduction compared to earlier plantings, and then it starts to tail off. The extent of yield reduction after May the 1st is not just like it's falling off the edge of a cliff. It's a steady yield reduction that's related to that crop maturing during a more unfavorable environmental period later in the summer. But it's not any different than what the rate of yield loss would be in Iowa or with, you know, your other summer crops that respond the same way as well for the most part. And the other thing I'll interject, I guess, to support that research data is the highest recorded yields produced in Mississippi ever, I guess, which was a part of the National Corn Growers Association yield contest, was planted several years ago, the first week of May, May 4th, I believe, in an area around Highway 8 in Mississippi. So that corresponds exactly with the research data that we conducted many years ago at Stoneville and on campus at Starkville. The other part of that, I guess, is that dryland corn responds a fair amount differently than irrigated corn. The yield response associated with late plantings is almost a linear decline with dryland producers. It's much more important to plant in a timely fashion, but there's a lot of corn every year that gets planted the last week of April, first week of May, throughout the northeastern corridor of Mississippi. It can be relatively productive, but there's certainly inherent dangers associated with backing those reproductive periods up into a more unfavorable, stressful period later in the summer. So it's important, obviously, to get the crop in the ground and get it off to a good start. And everybody knows that corn is a lot more sensitive to stand issues than what other crops are as well.
Eric, when we had you on a few weeks ago, was in that real early planting period. How's that corn faring? And then related to that, we've talked before, and oftentimes some of the corn that gets planted later than that super, super early period, so maybe end of March versus first of March, often does better, particularly in the seedling stage. So how's that super early corn doing?
The early corn is looking fine. We haven't really had a much of an improvement in seedling conditions as we go through the planting season. There's two things that affect the seedling development: soil temperatures and soil moisture. And it seems like every time we've got a little window, we've had a big flood and rain come behind it, and then often cool soil temperatures associated with the planting time too, which slows down the seedling growth and just exposes it to a lot more issues than what it would be if it was warm conditions. So even this week, we've got temperatures, low temperatures in the 30s in parts of the state. We've had a few issues and certainly had flooding issues in many areas of the state. We've got our share of problems, certainly, but we certainly haven't had much of an improvement in weather conditions related to planting that have been a lot more favorable as the data has progressed through the planting seasons.
I would point out, in the years I've been here, I think I've maybe received one telephone call about seedling disease issue in corn, and it just, everything lined up correctly for the seedling disease issue to occur. And regardless of what the air temperature is, soil temperature, I think, is going to remain fairly static. It's warm enough to plant regardless of what the air temperature is, and that's definitely beneficial, but that doesn't factor into rainfall, puddling, and then air temperature, and that can all work against you. But I don't know that we've had those types of situations.
Corn is a resilient plant. Obviously, we've got some issues, but considering how poor the environmental conditions have been around some of these planting windows, for the most part, we've had a fairly successful start.
So Eric, we've gotten some big rains here.
I put it on Twitter. We've had 27 inches of rain in Stoneville.
It's definitely a wet spring, and I haven't been to those places, Eric, where there's been 10 plus inches of rain, and I know there's a couple of those around. You mentioned the flooding, and so most of what I have seen in the places that I've been, it's been low ends, in low end of the field, and then that water comes on off relatively quickly, as you would expect, particularly since it's early in the year and all the drains are open, at least inside the field perimeter. So you mentioned corn being resilient. How long can corn stay under like that and not encounter too many problems?
That's a loaded question there.
I know, I thought that as it was coming out of my mouth. Well,
we're hoping for a loaded answer.
Yeah, just relative. How long is too long, where it's just absurd?
60 to 72 hours kind of comes to mind. And I'm thinking about corn that's in the seed that has not emerged yet. It's going to be most vulnerable to saturated conditions after it's been planted, but before it's emerged. Just having saturated soil there removes the aeration, and that young seedling is trying to grow and emerge and become self-sufficient. And that's the most vulnerable time period there is. And oftentimes we don't think about, you know, the flooding literally stunning or potentially killing the plants, but that's what's going to happen if there's not sufficient aeration for those seedlings to live over an extended time period. So it's basically stunning or, you know, shutting those plants down to a point where they can't even survive, basically.
So will you see that? I mean, will those plants emerge, or are they just basically going to die before they emerge from the soil profile if they've been underwater too long?
A lot of times they won't emerge. Usually if they emerge, they will probably live, but that's where you see the growth disparity after emergence, where some plants are up and got three emerged leaves, and then you've got these stragglers that have, you know, less leaves than that. And that's the best tool that a consultant or a farmer can look at to assess the quality of the stand. You know, you can look at it every day and see when emergence is and know that it's 12 or 24 hours or 36 hours or 48 hours difference. But a corn plant's growth is dictated by temperature. So the hours has no relevance to the corn plant. In other words, if it's 63 degrees instead of 51, the disparity in terms of the hours is going to change dramatically. So there can be tremendous differences between weeks of planting, different fields, and certainly years. You know, if you've got a research database that was conducted one year, it's not going to be the same next year because the soil temperatures are steadily changing. So looking at the at the growth differences in the plant is a lot more relevant from a diagnostic standpoint than how many hours it emerged differently than its neighbor.
The things I've been called about so far, Eric, feel like the paraquat drift has ticked up a little bit this year, and that often happens when we get a extended planting time with our grass crops and we're getting beans in, we're getting cotton in that are in close proximity to those. A couple of them that I've seen have been pretty severe, fortunately, relatively small areas. What else are you going to the field and looking at and talking to people about?
Along the stand issues, you know, the flooding is usually going to occur on one side of the field, and whatever percentage of that field is, 20-30% that has, you know, a 70-75% stand or something like that, then the rest of the stand might be relatively good. So when I try to address or help folks assess that stand is, obviously you would like to have a full stand in the entire field, but a 80% stand of corn is still going to produce it's somewhere between 85 and 90% of optimal yield potential. Obviously, you wouldn't like to lose 20% of your stand, but if you've got that type of stand reduction in only 20% of the field, your best decision is probably going to be to keep that entire field instead of destroying the whole field and starting over. The other question that comes to mind is, what if I go back out there and supplement that portion of the field, that 20% of the stand, with an additional planting to try to bring it up to speed? And we've also conducted research to address that. And planting into a partial stand is a huge problem. You're never going to achieve more than about 85% of an optimal yield potential if you plant into a partial stand, regardless of how many plants are left out there. So it's always better to kill an existing stand with a herbicide and restart clean if you need to replant.
I could hear you in my ear yesterday saying that as I was spot planting my sweet corn.
What else is coming up, Eric? I know before we started recording, you talked about some erosion issues and some of those things you've had telephone calls about.
We've had a few issues or a few phone calls from consultants and growers about places where they've got huge pounding rains, may have had fresh beds, or certainly sandy soil is normally involved, where there was heavy erosion of beds at some point after planting. What happens, I guess, to put it all in perspective, when a corn seedling begins its growth process, it shoots a shoot up from the seed that's called the mesocarp, and it elongates up towards the soil surface. When it senses light at the soil surface, it notices that and says, this is where I need to put my nodal roots in the crown of the plant in order to optimize development. So it does that, and then it continues developing the shoot up above ground. And the problem is, if that soil at the soil surface washes away, those nodal roots typically form about 3/4 of an inch or so below the soil surface. And if that 3/4 of an inch is washed away and exposes those nodal roots where they can't get started growing normally, that develops into a huge problem later on. There's two parts of the corn root system. There's a part called the seminal root system that develops below the seed, and it only serves a functional purpose for the first 2 or 3 weeks after germination. The primary part of the root system is called the nodal root system. It develops above the seed. It provides all the water and nutrient uptake during the season and provides a lateral support for the stalk, you know, anytime after it gets more than 4 or 5 inches tall. Certainly provides that support, you know, later in the season as well. So if the nodal root system is restricted because of a placement issue or an erosion issue in this case, where those roots are trying to grow into hard, dry, or crusted soil, that's a huge problem that often causes what we call rootless corn syndrome when the corn gets about a foot tall. And it normally occurs about that time period because the size of the stem starts to increase pretty substantially, got a lot more mass associated with the stem. A slight wind at that time period, if it doesn't have any nodal roots to provide lateral support, causes those stalks to blow over. And then the only thing holding them on is that mesocotyl shoot where it comes from the seed up to the crown of the plant. And if that mesocotyl dries out or breaks, then that plant dies, basically. The development of those nodal roots becomes a real significant problem if there's heavy erosion or for some reason they didn't develop normally during this time period from emergence to, you know, when the corn is a foot tall.
And there's no recovering from that, right, Eric? I mean, that's going to be a problem for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Hopefully, you know, you get enough moisture, mild conditions, and those nodal roots take hold and get started growing. Everybody understands that in this case, particularly, that pulling some soil up against the base of the plants would be helpful. The problem with that from a practical standpoint is if you run a cultivator or something through the field and throw soil up towards the base of the plants, if they don't have any nodal roots to provide lateral support already, any soil that is redistributed up towards those plants is likely going to push them over and either bury them or cause more issues than it would be otherwise. It's just not practical to think that you're going to be able to throw soil up against the base of the plants and replace that inch of soil that was lost because of soil erosion, likely. In theory, that would work, but in practical terms, that's not very likely that you'll be able to do that and keep those plants erect. They're already fairly vulnerable to that, and I cultivated way too much corn back in the day without a guidance system on the tractor, by the way, to know that if you get off just a little bit in terms of using something, a cultivator type tool that was pulling soil towards those corn plants, that things can go south pretty quickly, basically.
Eric, we thank you so much for the time this morning. I know it's a crazy time of the year for us and for everybody involved. So that's what we're here for. If folks have specific questions, please pick up the phone and call and ask. I mean, there's no question that's too dumb. It's important to ask all of them, especially now.
Eric, man, we appreciate it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is a production of Mississippi State University Extension.